So we're in now Perek Revi'i, the fourth Perek Mishnah Yud Ches, according to this translation or whatever derivation and splitting it up. Okay. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Al teratza es chavercha b'shas kaso, don't appease your friend at the time of his anger. Va'al tanachameu b'shas hamiso mutal lefanav, don't give him comfort, don't comfort him in the hour when his dead, meaning a relative of his who has died, mutal lefanav is like stretched out before him, meaning don't comfort him at the time when his dead is before him. Va'al tish'al lo b'shas nidro, and don't question him at the time of his vowing, and don't try to see him in the hour of his degradation. Okay, let's do it with Rav Hirsch's translation, which is definitely better than mine. I'll say that again. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Al teratza es chavercha b'shas kaso, seek not to appease your fellow man at the time of his anger. Va'al tanachameu b'shas shemiso mutal lefanav, nor comfort him when his dead lies before him. Va'al tish'al lo b'shas nidro, don't nor suggest ways to reconsider his vow at the time he took it. Okay, va'al tishtadel or oso b'shas kalkaloso, and strive not to see him at the time of his humiliation. So, if you're looking at this Mishnah, how many parts does the Mishnah have?
Which letter is it?
It's Yud Ches. So it has four, right? Al teratza es chavercha b'shas kaso. Don't. Okay, let's. Va'al tanachameu b'shas shemeso mutal lefanav. Va'al tish'alu b'shas nidro. Va'al tishtadel oso b'shas kalkoso. Okay. Hi, Yelet. Shalom, shalom. Okay, so it has these four parts. Now, what is? Have you already sensed a sort of like theme or something that ties these together? And if not, actually, let's take it a different way, right? There are four parts of this Mishnah, and you might say that what makes it interesting, or what the Mishnah is trying to highlight for us right off the bat, if we're just looking at Pshat, is the four like massive, almost like traumatic emotional experiences that a person could have, right? Ka'as, anger. Don't try to appease him at the time of his anger. Mourning, grief, right? An intense sadness. And don't try to comfort him out of his sadness. Al tish'alu b'shas nidro. So let's do the second one. Al tish'adel ler oso b'shas kalkaloso. If he's, like, again, he's humiliated, right? That's the word that Rav Hirsch uses. So humiliation. What's the emotion? What's the intense emotion that, again, seems to be a negative one in some capacity if it's grouped with these? Al tish'alu b'shas nidro. When he's making a neder, what emotional state is he in? If he's like making a neder and you're trying to, you know, question him to like make it a lighter neder, what emotion sits behind that? It doesn't have to be one of Exon. What's his name? Exon? Paul Exon? Paul Eckerman? One of his six. You might say it's like passion, right? It's like a certain zeal. It's a certain, like, it grips you. This certain, my phone is buzzing and it's annoying me, right? A certain passion, okay? So again, it's these four intense emotional experiences. And what is the Mishnah telling you to do or not to do? So let's read it again, okay? Al tiratza es chaver chabishas kaso. Don't appease him in the time of his anger. Al tanachameu b'shas shemeso mutal lefanav. Don't comfort him when his dead is before him. Al tish'alo b'shas nidro. Don't like heckle him basically when he's in the middle of making a vow. When he's like passionate about a vow that he's making. Al tishtadel oso b'shas kalkaloso. And don't try to visit him when he's humiliated, in a time of humiliation. So what's the Mishnah telling you to do or not to do? What's the main instruction of the Mishnah?
On a base level, it sounds like staying away from people at a time that's very intense.
Good. It's so good. So the pshat is staying away from people at a time when it's very, again, emotionally intense in a negative way for them in some capacity. More than staying away from them, what's it? And again, good, Ayala, you're right. It is telling you to stay away from them, because what does it not want you to do? What's it telling you to not do? It is telling you to stay away. It's telling you to not do what?
Not try to change that, like, to change their emotional state.
Good, bracha, not try to change their emotional state. Now, let's make that a little stronger, right? Because in what way are you changing their emotional state? You're trying to what? What's the term that we use in 20... What'd you say?
It says don't console him.
Consult. Okay, good. So what's the general word that we could use for all those things that you're told not to do that we would use in 21st century America? Don't try to. What?
Reframe.
Okay, that's like a very much more like positive, mature term. I would say like don't try to fix them. Right? This mission is telling you don't try to fix the other person's emotional state. If a person is in like some bad emotional state, yeah, you're right. Like it's more, you know, mature, like reframe them in some capacity. It's like, don't try to fix them. Don't try to jump in and fix something about them, right? Don't try to appease him if he's angry, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So good. So here's the problem that we're going to expect the Mefarshim to all try to explain, which is the question of why not? Right? Why not? And it's really a deeper question than this, which is that I think that if we didn't have this Mishnah for Rav Shimon ben Elazar, we wouldn't necessarily think, part of this Mishnah feels like very intuitive, like very self-evident, and part of this Mishnah feels like a very big chiddush. Like, I could sort of imagine the Mishnah having been written exactly the opposite, and saying like, you know, when you see a friend in anger, you should try to appease him. And if you see a friend in grief, you should try to comfort him. And if your friend is humiliated, you should try to visit him, and not in order. And if a friend is making a neder, you should try to jump in and make sure. Or like, I could sort of see it saying the other way. But the Mishnah very much is saying, like Ayala said, stay out of it. Don't try to fix him. But it doesn't tell us why not. So that's going to be what we're going to expect all of Mefarshim to do, is to explain why not. Why not? What's the problem with trying to reframe or fix? Let's say reframe, because it's a little easier to say, like, why shouldn't you reframe instead of why shouldn't you fix them? Like, yeah. Okay, good. So that's the question. We're going to read Rabbeinu Yonah, we're going to read Rav Hirsch, and then we're going to do something else. Okay, ready? Here's Rabbeinu Yonah. You tell me, what's Rabbeinu Yonah's basic thesis of why this is a bad idea? Okay, why the Mishnah is telling you not to do this? If you do try to appease him, he's going to say things that are like not appropriate. And you'll end up just making him more mad. He's going to say the same kind of thing in all of them, so I'm going to read it through. Don't comfort him. When he's like, again, in this pit of like grief and despair, The comfort is really just going to make him more angry again. Yavo lomar dvarim lo tovim, and he's going to say things that aren't good. For the record, why does Rabbeinu Yonah have to say, like, he's going to say things? He did that in both of them, right? He said, why doesn't he just say, don't try to appease him, you're going to make him more angry. Don't try to comfort him, you're going to make him angry. Why does he say, don't try to appease him, you're going to make him more angry, and he's going to say things that are inappropriate? And don't try to comfort him, you're going to make him angry, and he's going to say things that are inappropriate.
Going to cause someone to sin.
You're going to cause him to sin. And I think the assumption behind it is the assumption behind that, which is that if he had not sinned, nothing would have been really wrong with his reaction, right? That's the point, is that you're getting him to do something that's not okay. Him just feeling more angry is not itself you having caused harm. I think from here you learn that Rabbeinu Yonah does not hold that anger or grief themselves are issues, right? Just making him more angry or more increasing his emotional state isn't nice, but like Ayala said, you haven't caused him to do something wrong. He has to actually do something wrong for it to be wrong, which is, again, interesting. I think just like how Rabbeinu Yonah holds on these emotions. Okay, let's keep going. Basically, don't ask him questions about his neder. Right? He's basically, you're going to ask him about his vow, and to prove to you that he really means his vow, he's going to make all these like clauses, and he won't be able to get out of his vow. What I always think of when I hear this is Kalba Savua, right? Whose daughter married Rabbi Akiva, and when Kalba Savua heard that his daughter was going to marry Rabbi Akiva, he made a vow that neither of them were part of his inheritance. They both could not enjoy like any piece of his money. 24 years later, when Rabbi Akiva goes to learn and comes back and is now the Gadol Hador, Kalba Savua goes to Rabbi Akiva to try to annul his vow. And Rabbi Akiva says to him, if you had known that your son-in-law would become the Gadol Hador, would you have sworn out of his inheritance? And Kalba Savua says, if I had known that he would learn even one Mishnah in his whole life, I wouldn't have done it. So Rabbi Akiva says, he's me. You know, you basically made your neder on a false premise. So again, but the point is, when Kalba Savua was swearing it, if someone had said, Well, what if he becomes the Gadol Hador? Then he would have said, in the moment, even if he becomes a Gadol Hador, he can't participate in it, right? So it's telling you not to do that. Don't say to him, make a clause that if he becomes a Gadol Hador, you're actually not going to disinherit him, because then in the person's anger, he will make that clause, but to the opposite, and then you'll end up having caused him no way to get out of his netter later on. If he's done something wrong and he himself is ashamed of it, he's humiliated from it, don't you visit him and also embarrass him. So again, according to Rabbi Yonah, he doesn't tell it to you explicitly. Why should you not do these things? Because what? What's the problem? It's the same problem for all of them. What's his thesis? Don't do these things. Don't terasas chavercha. Don't do anything like that, because what's going to happen? You're going to... What do you say? Are you going to make it better or worse? Give me a thumbs up for better, thumbs down for worse. Are you going to make it better or worse? Worse. You're going to make it worse. So what? Don't do it. Don't try to do these things. Because why? Because they are one word or three words. Because they are, you could say they are futile, or you could say they are doomed to failure. Don't do any of these things because you will fail. And in failing, you will make it worse. Okay, so that's Rabbeinu Yonah's basic premise. Why aren't you doing these things? Because you're not going to succeed. You're going to try to do it. It's not going to work, and you're going to end up making it worse. I'm going to read you Rav Hirsch. You tell me, Rav Hirsch, if he says the same thing as Rabbeinu Yonah with the same premise or something different. Okay, here we go. Here's Rav Hirsch. When you seek to help your neighbor, wait for an appropriate time to do it. Do not think that good intentions alone are sufficient excuse and justification for all things. If you wish to influence your neighbor's mood, do not attempt to do so at the time when he is shaken or agitated, but wait until he has grown calmer, and hence more amenable to a reasonable suggestion. This rule holds true in whatever it is that you seek to accomplish, and he goes on a little bit, but basically says the same thing. Okay, so again, Rav Hirsch here points out a piece of the mission that we don't talk about, which is that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is not telling you not to do these things. He's telling you not to do them at a specific time. He's not saying don't try to comfort somebody who is experiencing grief. He's saying don't try to comfort someone who's experiencing grief at the point at which they are in like the throes of grief. That's a different kind of thing, right? The basic mechanism at play here that makes it wrong is the timing, right? Bisha'as kal kaluso. Bisha'a shemeso mutalafanav, right? That hour is a bad time. So Rav Hirsch is saying, and that hour, don't try to comfort him, don't try to appease him, don't try to calm him down, right? Don't try to visit him. So is Rav Hirsch coming from the same place or a different place as Rabbeinu Yonah? Same thumbs up, different thumbs down. Again, Rav Hirsch's basic premise, wait until he has grown calmer and hence more amenable to reasonable suggestion. So what's Rav Hirsch worried about? The same thing or a different thing?
Something that could be helpful at one point may not be helpful in the moment.
Exactly, right? So he's still worried about the same thing as Rabbeinu Yonah, right? That in that moment, at that time, it's not going to help. So don't do it at that time because you're going to fail. He doesn't necessarily say you're going to make it worse. So he's maybe...
different. I think why? Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, like, whenever, like, it's going to fail versus Rav Hirsch is saying, like, there's a more opportune time to say it.
Okay.
It's something you don't say it, almost.
I do hear you. Rav Hirsch doesn't really talk about the negative piece of it. You're definitely right about that, right? Rabbeinu Yonah comes and says, like, don't do it because it's going to make it worse in this specific way, right? So he's worried about you making it worse. Rav Hirsch is basically worried about it being futile. You're right? Rabbeinu Yonah is more like, you're going to make it worse. And Rav Hirsch is like, you know, it's going to just do nothing. It's going to fail. If you're trying to be effective in influencing somebody, this is not a great strategy. Right, so he's still worried you're going to fail, you're just not going to make it worse. Rabbeinu Yonah's worried you're going to fail and make it worse. Rav Hirsch points out something else, which again, to me in the beginning, well, I'll tell you in a second, right? Rav Hirsch points out something else, which is that I thought it was fascinating. Do not think that good intentions alone are sufficient excuse and justification for all things. And that at this point, when I was done reading Rav Hirsch, and again, I had read a few Mefarshim also, I had Rabbeinu Yonah, I had Rav Hirsch, and I was like, okay, I think that maybe is like the Musar HaSkel, that like good intentions aren't enough. Right here, you're trying to comfort your friend. You're trying to get him out of a neder that you think he's going to regret 20 years down the line, like Kalba Sivua did, right? You're trying to get them into a place where he's calm, where he's comforted. You certainly have good intentions. But the point of the Mishnah, the Musar HaSkel of the Mishnah, seems to be, I don't really care. That's not enough. It's not enough. You also have to figure out how to be effective. You also have to figure out how to like actually influence this person's mood. You have to make sure that what you're doing in you trying to be good isn't making something worse. Okay, and I thought that it was interesting contrast to the rest of the Mishnayos that we've done, especially in Perek Daled, which are very much that Beit Anan Lamakom, good intentions are enough, right? A lot of what we're learning is that when it comes to Beit Anan Lamakom, intending to do good, trying to do good, even if you fail, even if you struggle, even if you don't actually manage to do it, in a lot of ways it is enough. And it's almost like this Mishnah is coming and telling us that Beit Anan Lachavero, good intentions aren't enough. You have to have something more. You have to have certain skill. You have to have like something. Okay, so by this time I was like, I had sort of a chabura, and I kept looking over my notes, and part of me was like, it's just, I'm missing something. Like, I have to be missing something. I went through Rashi, I went through Rambam, I went through Ravadar Bachanura. I was like trying to find something else, and I just felt like something here. I went through, again, you know, Chochmah Musar has a little piece on it, and it was just like, it was not, it just felt like I was on the surface. And it was like a good Mishnah, and I felt like there should be something more. So I called Rav Carey Friedman, who you know, because he spoke when I was on maternity leave. Right, if you don't remember who he is or you weren't there, he was like a chaplain for the FBI for many years. He still works in like spiritual health for law enforcement. That's like his specialization. He's in the middle of writing a book about it right now, a second book about it right now. And he was, when I was in Stern, I basically like lived at his house for 2 years when I was there. And he's still like one of my basic like mentors and Rabbeim. And he taught Pirkei Avos for many, many years. So I have like a version of his notes. So I texted him. So when I get like really stuck, sometimes I go back to his notes and I try to figure out if he said anything. And they're kind of like short form. So I texted him like, and he had something there that looked like he had like real mamushus, and I just didn't know what it was. So I texted him, I'm stuck. I'm stuck on 418. I need your help. Like, what's this about? So he called me and we had this like fascinating conversation last night. And I want to tell you what he said. And that is like the next dimension of this Mishnah. That was like exactly what I felt like I was mentioning. And Chazdei Hashem for Rav Carey and just coming through was like a lot of Hashgacha process in trying to prepare this. So he told me this fascinating story. He said, that Mishnah, he's like, it's funny that like that's the Mishnah that you're stuck on. He said, that Mishnah he actually ended up teaching to in a massive conference of traumatic medical professionals. So emergency room doctors, emergency room nurses, social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists who dealt with mostly trauma. He said the conference that he was at was in 2007. So I think it was after Katrina. There was like just some national disaster. And they were having this like medical conference for trauma specialists. And he was invited to be the chaplain. And he was speaking all the way at the end of the conference. And he said that as he was there, he started realizing that there was like this subtext in the perspectives that the different people at the conference were taking from each other. And that when he thought about it, it was like exactly the different perspectives that the Mefarshim took on this Mishnah. And he must have encountered more Mefarshim than me, and I was trying to look up some, and I ran out of time, but I really should continue to do that. I was trying to read through everything on Sepharia, at least. So he said that he was going to do like some talk, and he chucked it. And he spoke about this Mishnah. This was the Mishnah that he spoke about at the conference. And he said, like, when you're dealing with, again, these four basic traumatic human emotions that people have, there are a few arguments about how not to deal with people. The first is that, again, that's Rabbeinu Yonah, that's Rav Hirsch. It's also Rashi, Rambam, Rav Abarjah Bachanura, and the Chochmah Musar, meaning everyone who I usually prepare for. Here, they all had that opinion, which is that the danger is in failing. The danger is in trying to comfort somebody when, let's say, again, like, let's just take that example. You're trying to comfort somebody at a time when they're like, you know, they literally just lost a relative or a close friend or whatever it is. And you're doomed to failure and you're just going to exacerbate their wound. The other Mefarshim, Rav Carey says, and again, this is like a different perspective that if you're teaching trauma, you should be aware of, is there's a danger in succeeding. Because if you convince somebody who's angry to calm down before they're ready, they're just bottling up inside of them and it's going to come out later. Or if you comfort somebody before they're actually ready to be comforted and they accept your comfort, that's way more dangerous for them developing traumatic stress disorder later on than if you actually let them work through it. Right? So he says there's a danger in failure, but there's also a danger in success. And he says, and you see some Mefarshim who hold that the danger, right, Ayelet? Thank you. They said that some Mefarshim also hold that the danger is just in trying, whether or not you succeed or fail. That's not the point. The issue is that you've tried. And why? I found one Mefarsh on Sepharia who does say this. It's the Yachin. I have no idea who he is. I should look it up. Yachin says this. He says that you should not comfort somebody of Bisha'as. Shemesa mutalafanim. He says, the Adaraba. It's the opposite. Sheyira she'ein adam yitztair b'tztaro, yitztair yoter. Because if you're trying to comfort him, it means that you're not empathizing with his pain. You're already in a separate place. And if he sees that when he's going through one of these traumatic emotions, nobody relates to him and nobody's there with him, that's going to make his pain greater. So I don't care whether or not you fail. I don't care whether or not you succeed. That's not the danger here. The danger isn't even just trying to show up to him in a way where you're trying to influence him. You've already misstepped because he doesn't want you to be influenced. He wants you to be where he is and he wants you to feel the pain that he's feeling. So I thought that was like fantastic. And then Irv Carey went on. And he told me another story. I asked him then, like, what's the Musar Haskel? Like, what's the point? Is the point about the good intentions? I think where I felt, like, stuck in Rav Hirsch's, like, you know, good intentions aren't enough is that it's not really a Musar Haskel. It doesn't tell you what to do. It just tells you good intentions aren't enough. And it's like, okay, well, if I'm well-intended and that's not enough, where does that leave me, right? And again, I think this is interesting because, well, we'll get to that then. We'll get to that later. So Rav Carey then said, like, you know, have I ever told you this story? And he told me a story that I never heard. I don't remember hearing from him before. He said that he had a friend who was a rabbi in like a small city, and one of the rabbi's congregants was in the hospital. So this rabbi went to go visit his congregant in the hospital, and he stopped by the front desk and he said, "Hi, I'm a clergyman, and I'm wondering if you have any other Jewish patients here. I would like to visit them while I'm visiting so-and-so." So they were like, "Oh yeah, you know, we actually do have a patient. He's in room, you know, 307. So the rabbi goes to room 307, and there's this like old man there in the hospital bed. And the rabbi walks in and says, "Hi, you know, I'm Rabbi so-and-so. I just came here to visit you." And the man like lights up and he's like, "Rabbi, I can't believe it. You came here to visit me. Please sit down. Like, tell me." And the man is like so happy to see him. And he's like, "Rabbi, I can't believe you came here just to visit me." And the rabbi's like, "Yeah, you know, I have a congregant who also is in the hospital here. And he's also, you know, I came to visit him. And like, I figured that once I was here, I should like chaperine more mitzvos." And the rabbi telling Rav Carey this like bonked himself on that. He's like, it was such a stupid thing to say. And he said, the man is like, his face just fell. And he was like, "That's what I am to you? I'm an opportunity for you to chop around more mitzvahs? I don't want to see you anymore. Get out. Like, please, get out." And he said he, like, kicked the rabbi out of his room. And again, the rabbi telling Rav Carey this was like, I did way more harm having visited him than I did had I never gone into his room. And he said, like, that was my issue, is that when he felt, like, dehumanized, he's like, "I'm not a lulav. I am not a prop for you to do mitzvahs. I'm a person. And that's the perspective that you have to have on me. I don't want to be your lulav." And I think like that's also the deeper message here also, right? Is that it's not just like good intentions aren't enough. It's, yeah, in Beinam L'Chaveiro, good intentions are not enough. And I think a lot of conflict, and this is like where I was going before. I think if you think about the last times that you had a real Beinam L'Chaveiro conflict with someone, it was exactly this Mishnah. Right? It's exactly everybody being well-intentioned and trying to do something right and still somehow really having injured the other person. It's almost never like I was just evil or the other person was just evil and I don't know, I had like this evil bout and I did something wrong. Right? Like almost everybody on the Chaveiro issue, real issue that we have is well-intentioned people. Good intentions are not enough on the Chaveiro. But I was like, okay, but what's the, like, then what, right? What's the next step? And that's the next step is like, you really have to see the other person. You have to be able to see another person as not just a prop for your good intentions. It's not just like, I want to calm him. I want to comfort him. I want to be the one who like, I'm there for him in his humiliation. No. There isn't a real person on the other side of that. It's not just a prop for your mitzvah observance and your good intentions. The other person is not somewhere for your good intentions to land. And that I think is like the different layers of this Mishnah, right? It's not just about failure. It's also about success and it's also about trying. And the basis of that is like the good intentions aren't enough. What is good enough? Seeing the other person as like a full human. It's a very hard thing for us to do. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but like it's very hard to really believe that the other person is an entire person. And again, not just even the most well-intentioned sentiments are not enough. But on Chaveiro, we really need more. Other people deserve more from us.